Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph. This is a day six Tennis Podcast from the 2016 US Open. I can't believe we've managed to do one of these every night so far. We're going to try and keep it up despite our increasing levels of fatigue, but it's a real pleasure to be bringing them to you. I'm Catherine Whittaker. I'm working for Eurosport out here, British Eurosport. I'm joined, as usual, by David Law, who's working for BBC Radio 5 Live and is just commentating on two of the most thrilling sets of tennis featuring his very own, Birmingham's very own, Solihull's very own, Dan Evans. How to sum up the heartbreak? He was match point up and ended up losing 6-2 in the fifth. But what, I hope he can see it this way, what an occasion to have been part of.
Yeah, that was a real thrill to watch. Just as a tennis occasion, forget the fact that it involved a British person, forget that it involved somebody from the Midlands, forget the fact that it involved somebody from Solihull. Apparently, the closer to victory he got, the more localised I referenced to his whereabouts.
But David says forget that, but he won't ever forget that for even a split second.
But taking all of that aside, and I mean, really, we do try hard to be objective on the radio because that's our job. But it was inspiring tennis from both players, and to see a British player perform like that, particularly one who's had Dan Evans' backstory, where he has just underperformed and unfulfilled his potential for so many years. Well, that was him laying it all out there, showing everybody in the world just what a talent he is with a tennis racket in his hands. And if you didn't get to see the match, if you perhaps want to see it later, recorded or whatever, I can tell you it is a shock.
Highlights on British Eurosport tomorrow, I think, late morning, something like that.
On message, Catherine Whittaker. No, she's quite right. It's well worth it, I promise you. I mean, it is a tennis fan's dream to watch shot making from two single-handed backhands like that, and the clever way I thought that Evans constructed his strategy. And actually, I hate to say this, but I picked in a way what I thought he might have success with, which is that sort of floating backhand cross court, just taking the sting away from Wawrinka and then darting forehands down the line and coming to the net. What I was surprised about was the regularity that he came to the net later on with, and how Wawrinka had so little answer to any of those late ghosting approaches to the net. It was very clever from Evans and Hilton, Mark Hilton, his coach, whoever concocted that plan. But the execution of it, I mean, it was Henman-like to watch it in terms of the way he would be so reliable on the volley. You have to give enormous credit again to Wawrinka, because in the fourth set tiebreak, Evans was on top. Evans had match point, and Wawrinka, he's just the most amazing shot maker under pressure, and he goes for it.
Second serve ace to bring up set point. I mean, that's going for it, isn't it?
It sure is. And I mean, it was Louis Armstrong court, which is just a little closer, isn't it? The crowd to the action, and you get that feeling of it being a real carnival, a real party atmosphere. And Evans stayed with him all the way until the deciding set, when he faded away, and then he started picking rows with everybody about everything, which did quite amuse me. But you know, what an occasion, what a performance, And with Andy Murray just having scraped through, really, in four sets, not scraped through, that's probably an exaggeration, but laboured, certainly by his standards, Britain have three players in the last 16 for the first time at this tournament since 1969.
Oh, but I was envisaging it being four for so long. Throughout that fourth set, the four-set tiebreak, I joined the party a bit late. I was only keeping an eye on the match up until that fourth set. I wasn't able really to engage with it because I was busy with other things. But, I mean, that fourth set I watched from the photographer's pit and the tiebreak, I mean, he was taking my breath away. He was taking the racket away from Stan Wawrinka. I mean, if you were asked to sit courtside and say, who's the guy that everyone talks about being one of the most talented players on tour that can generate pace from nothing with just racket head speed, if you're an alien that landed on Earth and didn't know anything about tennis, you'd say that's Dan Evans. That's the little guy from Solihull up that end of the court wearing fluoro yellow and black. And yeah, he was amazing. And I know Wawrinka talked a lot about just how talented he thinks Dan Evans is in his post-match interview.
And I think that is just about the ultimate testament to how good Evans could be, certainly in terms of racket skill. The fact that Wawrinka has to be one of the two or three most talented players on the planet in terms of what he can do with the tennis racket. And Mats Wilander's actually called him the most exciting player in the world in the past, and yet there he was on the court afterwards. And I know players are always generous when they've won like that. They'll always, when they've won a really close match, they'll always give credit if asked. He wasn't asked, he volunteered it. He said twice he's really talented. And he just, you know, he educated that crowd out there who, frankly, well, they saw it with their own eyes. But it wasn't just this gritty war of attrition. This was two shot makers just outdoing each other one after another. And it was a treat to watch. And it was so, so close to Dan Evans being in the last 16 of the US Open. I mean, The fear is, from his perspective, is that he may never got a better chance than that. One sometimes thinks of Heather Watson's close run against Serena Williams. I think it's very easy to think, oh, you know, imagine what ranking he can be in a year's time. You never know whether you'll get that chance again. Certainly talent-wise, there's no reason why, if he carries on the way he is, that he can't hurt a lot more players at a lot more tournaments.
And he's going up to 52 in the world now. He's going to get into Masters Series. As he says himself, that's where the big ranking points are. You know, he's seeing the bigger picture now. He's seeing the long term. You know, he was seeing this run here in terms of ranking points, in terms of the long term. So, yeah, I mean, possibly there'll be a little dip from this. It'll be interesting to see if he gets picked for a Davis Cup semi-final, won't it? But anyway, yeah, that's what's happened.
Can I just say as well, Catherine, very quickly, I think a lot of people sometimes wonder, well, what has this guy been doing with himself? I mean, he's 25 years of age. You know, we've heard about him for years. He's had these ridiculous dips where he went down to 700 and something in the world. Let's just hear a little bit from an interview I did with Dan Evans on BBC Radio 5 Live before this match. It was after the win he had over Alexander Zverev, and I asked him second of all what happened with going down in the rankings and what has turned around. And first of all, I asked him about the money, because, you know, this is a major deal in his life. What would he do with it? How do you deal with something like this when you come from a pretty grounded background and suddenly you're on this sort of stage? This is just a little excerpt from that interview on BBC 5 Live. You're going to take away a heck of a lot of cash from this, a lot of points, I know, a lot of cash, though. It's life-changing money for many people. What do you do with it? When you go home, do you just stick it in the bank and say, right, squirrel that away, on to the next tournament, take care of it later? What do you do? Or do you just go and say, right, let's have a good time for a bit?
No, put it away. With a lot of places, that money can be spent. So, yeah, it's sort of get it away from me and, yeah, just keep it in the bank.
Get it away from you. Don't trust yourself.
Yeah, I don't want to be seen with any of that. So, yeah, sort of just put it away.
Final one. If you go back just over a year, you were 700 and something in the world. I mean, how has this happened? What was the moment was there a light bulb moment where you thought, I'm wasting this, I'm wasting my talent or something?
Yeah, there was, but it was getting frustrating. Everybody telling me, you know, I should be doing this, I should be doing that. But it's a bit easier said than done, you know. It's that was the main thing, was people telling me I should be good, and then, you know, not actually doing anything about it. And a few people sort of stood up to the mark, including Leon and Mark Hilton, and yeah, helped me go for it. So yeah,
how? What did they do? I don't understand what changed.
Well, I got the LTA carried on funding me, which it's, you know, 25,700 in the world. It's a big gamble, I think. Give me a coach. Yeah, and obviously I employed a fitness coach as well back home in Birmingham myself. So it was, you know, those sort of things definitely help.
So that's Dan Evans explaining exactly why he struggled and how he picked himself up with the help of his coaching team and his mentor, really, Leon Smith. And hopefully, from his point of view at least, it's the first of a number of journeys through Grand Slam draws like this.
Very well said, David. Very, very well said. What else has happened today? Halep won. Simona Halep won.
That was exciting, wasn't it?
It was really exciting against Tamea Babos. And as somebody, I'm really embarrassed now because I can't remember who that somebody was, so I can't give them credit. But pointing out on Twitter, it was a very unusual sort of victory for Halep, because she's usually either sort of really great and steamrollers through everyone, through her opponent, the way people expect her to, or, you know, it's a bit of a horror show and she fails to live up to expectation. This was the sort of gritty win that we don't see enough from her, certainly not latterly, and I was very impressed.
Yeah, I didn't really understand. I didn't get a chance to watch all of the match, but I saw her go 6-1 up, and then I saw her go one set all and a breakdown in the third. And at that point, I remember reading a tweet from Brad Gilbert saying, Has Simona Halep always made this noise when she hits the ball? Because she was screeching with every shot, and it's not something that necessarily you associate with her. Now, I do a fair bit of commentary on the WTA circuit, and I have seen that in the past, but I do think it's probably to some degree stress-related as well. And certainly, there's no question that Simona Halep was getting pushed all the way in that match, and she just about won it. So, yeah, it keeps her hopes alive. Who knows what's next?
Serena Williams won as well today. She looked great to me. She looked absolutely great. She beat Hanna Larsson of Sweden, and it was just never in doubt. She was bullying her around the court. I mean, I was very, very impressed with that. Here comes Simon Briggs for a moment. I just ran and grabbed Simon Briggs for his thoughts on Dan Evans.
And my yogurt parfait from the cafe.
Yeah, we basically grab whatever we can to eat on the run, man. And he's basically having his breakfast at 10 p.m. now.
Simon, yeah. Dan Evans, what do you think?
Well, he was excellent again in the middle of the match. Performed a total comedy meltdown. The physio's intervention was absolute classic, wasn't it, of the genre?
And then How so?
Well, Dan was claiming that he wanted treatment on a sore ankle. Physio said, sorry, mate, you've got cramp, I'm not treating you. Dan then got into a big row with the physio, also with Cedric Murray. I said, you lot are all friends, because they're all French speakers. He was a French physio, and Cedric, I think, is French, or is he Swiss?
He's French.
So there's a little bit of Anglo-Gallic disharmony, and then the
That's guy... That's David's favourite kind of Anglo-Gallic.
Yeah, the guy, the physio, went back into his box and became a kind of unwitting pawn as Dan tried to rev himself up by going, it's not cramp, every time he turned around after a point.
Yes, he found a cause within the cause, a ridiculous cause, but it was very funny.
And I thought, if Wawrinka might go over and give the guy a clip round the ear for having made it much more difficult for him, because Dan actually played a couple of quite good games after the incident.
I imagine your day has been pretty Evans-Murray-centric. We were just covering the victories for Halep and Serena, but I guess this is a good time to move on to Murray. What are your impressions of that? Nobody was expecting Paolo Lorenzi to muster the challenge that he did today.
Yeah, he played well. I mean, I think Andy's first set was pretty alarming, 28 errors. He just got the approach all wrong. I think I got the impression he's trying so hard not to.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states.
UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Do a French Open and get tied up in long matches. He's actually becoming over anxious, and it's actually becoming totally counterproductive. And when he dropped the second set, there was a 180 degree switch in his attitude. He suddenly said, "Well, right, I've just got to stop fretting and play." And I thought he actually played a really good second half of the match. And in a way, I feel like he might come out of that match quite well. I mean, look, he was on court for 3 hours 17 more than he would have wanted. But I thought he really took it to Lorenzi, the third and fourth sets, got into a really good rhythm, seemed to serve well, having served horribly in the first half of the match. So match of two halves, and better to be the good half at the back half. I think not too bad.
And David, we know who he plays now, don't we?
Well, he plays Grigor, doesn't he? Grigor Dimitrov, who went through in four sets today, had his standard sort of complete walkabout in set three after playing beautifully before then. But, you know, be interesting, won't it? See, I think Simon's right in that will have really sharpened the senses tonight, because, my goodness, Paolo Lorenzi was good. He was running all over the place. He was taking it to Murray at times. I thought it was quite similar to Novak Djokovic against Gilles Simon at the Australian Open, personally, in terms of it was error-strewn, 63 unforced errors from the racket of Andy Murray. He hit 60-odd winners as well. But as you said, he came on strong at the end. I think Dimitrov is going to take it to him, but I think Murray will have enough.
Any other business, gentlemen? Any other business from day six at the US Open? Let's look forward to day seven indeed. Kyle Edmund against Novak Djokovic, amongst other things. But let's face it, that is the highlight, probably, from our perspective of tomorrow. It's the second match on Arthur Ashe. Far away. What have you got to say?
Well, I think it's going to be interesting to see how Edmund handles the occasion. What I did notice is that when he went out against Isner, he benefited from the match they played previously. He talked about it, which was a straight sets defeat at the French Open, and he said, I learnt from that and I know what I've got to do. He had a straight sets defeat to Djokovic, 6-3, 6-3, in Miami in March. And I think, again, he will benefit from that. He's felt the game. I think Edmund will give a very good account of himself, personally. And it's we just don't know what state Djokovic is in, because he hasn't been really tested since day one of this tournament. We're now halfway through the tournament. I think it could be quite competitive. I think Djokovic will win. I mean, anybody who doesn't think that is crazy. But I think Edmund can push him.
I spoke to Andy Murray presuming you did, everybody did, but I spoke to him for Eurosport after his win earlier, asked him about Carl, asked him what advice he would give Carl. Presumably he has actually given this advice to Carl, why wouldn't he? And he was adamant. He said, don't respect Djokovic too much. He said he thinks he made that mistake against really top players early on in his career in similar matchups, and that is the one thing that he would impress upon Carl for tomorrow.
Well, that's a slightly surprising thing to hear when you recall Andy's ability to shake up Roger Federer at the very beginning of his career, but maybe there were some other people he had an issue with. One interesting stat which Mark Petschy related to me was that when they analysed the data from Rio, Kyle's forehand was clocked at an average speed of 83 miles an hour, which was 3 miles an hour higher than Juan Martín Del Potro's.
Who also won today, by the way.
So I think that shows what an unbelievable piece of weaponry that is. It's one of the biggest bazookas out there on this tour.
And he's now using it with control and measure, isn't he? Which he wasn't necessarily before. I think that's what's so impressive. I think by the flurry of journalists I can see leaving the media centre and headed towards the interview room, I think Dan Evans is being called to press, and we might need to wrap this up.
Well, Catherine, we've just come out of the Dan Evans press conference, and crikey, a few journalists just walked past me, and we all looked at each other and just went, "Oh, poor lad." I mean, it was raw, wasn't it, what he was saying? It was. I think most people in there wanted to put their arm around him. I mean, usually you get, I suppose, experienced players who have taken a lot of heavy losses of that type at the highest level. They've almost got their sort of pre-prepared answers as a defence mechanism to just trot out. None of that with him. He said, anybody who says that they are not thinking about winning the match when they're a point away is lying, is a full of it, in his words. And he was clearly absolutely devastated. He referred to the smash that he missed at about 8-all in the tiebreak, and he just can't get it out of his head, can he?
Well, he didn't miss it. He just didn't do enough with it. He said I played it to the wrong side, and it gave Wawrinka a play on the ball. I'm a bit stunned by that press conference. I've just spoken to him as well, and he was exactly the same. It was a very, very tough interview. Because we had a little chat in the corridor, whilst we were waiting to hear what time he would come to press. And I asked you, as the official Dan Evans correspondent, how you thought he would be. You know about as well as anybody in the British press corps. And you said you thought he'd be, you know, disappointed but all right, because he's a realistic guy. You know, he's a really grounded, feet on the ground, you know, it is what it is kind of guy. And I'm not saying he wasn't. I mean, he was so realistic, I suppose, so real, so raw. He wasn't matter of fact about it at all. He is replaying that point and probably a couple of other points in his mind over and over again. And he says he's going to pull out of doubles. He says he hopes Kyrgios wins tonight because the news that his partner's leaving him high and dry in the doubles will be easier for him to take.
Injury based, the thing that he was saying wasn't cramp, that the umpire was having a big row with him on court about, that Simon was referencing. You know, he says it is an injury problem. I think there's fatigue there as well, just mental and physical fatigue. The bloke needs a little break, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah, he's spent. I mean, physical fatigue. I mean, he said, you know, it's a very good question from Barry Flatman of The Times, saying, you know, when Andy comes in after a loss like or similar to that, what he always says is, I've got to go and work harder. I've got to get physically stronger. And he said, how did he phrase it? He said,
do you subscribe to the theory that you need to go back to the gym? And he said, I haven't got that subscription.
He said, I haven't got that subscription. But then it sounded like exactly how you've just described, David. But then he said, look, I didn't win that match because of any physical deficiency. And he's right, you know, that fourth set tiebreak, they both looked as spent as one another. They both looked like they had enough in the tank for a fifth. I don't think he did lose it for any physical reason. So I think he's fair enough to respond that way. And
I didn't think, Catherine, that he would be taking it as hard as this, because he'd done himself proud in so many ways. I find it quite good that he is taking it this hard, because it obviously means that much to him. But he's got to get over it, and in a short while, I'm sure he will.
I cannot imagine that sort of feeling, that emotion that we just witnessed from him. I can't imagine really that making him anything but hungrier. How can you not be motivated to not ever feel like that again? When you feel awful, you know, you just want to find ways to make sure you don't ever feel that way again, right? So, I hope, more than hope, I expect now, having seen that after a holiday, after he's been to Marbella, he's found his passport, by the way, for anyone that saw that tweet saying, I've lost my passport. Apparently, he said, oh, I got given some Nike stuff and I just shoved my passport in with the freebies. I think after the holiday, I think, you know, getting back on the Davis Cup train will help him. As he just told me in my interview with him for Eurosport, he said, if I get dropped after this, I'll feel pretty aggrieved from the Davis Cup squad. I think give him a bit of time. He deserves that. But I'm pretty confident, having seen what I've seen now, that he will come back hungrier.
Indeed. So Dan Evans's journey at the US Open comes to an end for 2016. Stan Wawrinka moves onwards. Let's just have a little look at the order of play. Catherine's just going to hold my phone so that we can multitask together. What have we got? We've got Johanna Konta starting on Arthur Ashe Stadium, the first match of the day against Anastasia Sevastova, who's a fascinating story, having taken a year and a half out of the game. We've then got Madison Keys against Caroline Wozniacki. That could be a corker.
Could be a corker. Of course, the winner of those two matches would play one another, so each of them will be watching the other with interest, I'm sure. Yeah, Keys is my favourite to come through that one, though. Although Wozniacki, I have to say, she surprised me a bit this week. She's done very well.
I think that could go deep into a third set, actually. We've then got Rafael Nadal against Luca Puy, who I saw Henri Leconte, who's here for Eurosport in France today in the elevator, and he was raving about Luca Puy. He said he's serving and volleying, just playing the sort of game that Henri loves, you know, and made famous himself. So it'd be fascinating to see him come up against Nadal. In the evening session, there's a Grand Slam final, really, there. Between Petra Kvitova and Angelique Kerber. As we're hearing roars at the moment from the Arthur Ashe Stadium. Nick Kyrgios is playing. No doubt he's just gone and done a triple back somersault and hit a forehand winner in the process or something. Anyway, so Kvitova against Kerber. Who you got for that one?
I'm seeing the number 14 against Kvitova's name. It's strange, isn't it? I know she's had...
Stop trying to duck the question. Who's going to win?
Yeah, I think Kerber's going to win.
OK, I'm going to go Kvitova. So we've then got Djokovic against Edmund in the late night match. So we'll see how that one goes. What's going to happen in that one?
Well, seeing as you've already said earlier in the earlier instalment of the podcast, you'd be mad if you don't predict Djokovic to win. I'm going for Djokovic.
Yeah, quite right. Well, Djokovic is the best player in the world. So, Edmund is...
Yeah, not according to Mats Wilander just at the moment.
Well, you know, I mean, he's got a number one next to his name, hasn't he? On the Louis Armstrong court, we've got Joe Wilfried Tsonga against Jack Sock. That could be a good match, couldn't it? Who's going to win that? I think Sock might win that.
You've just scanned over last year's finalist Roberto Vinci against Alicia Serenko. That's first up.
Okay, who's going to win that?
Again, Vinci really impressed me this week. I think everybody
she's
thought,
on a roll again. She's going to do it this time.
Flash in the pan last year. No way she'll back it up. Well, more fool them, because she's been great.
Vinci's going to win then, isn't she?
Yeah,
I think so too. Yeah, right, fine. And Tsonga against Sock. I'm going Sock.
Are you now?
In four.
I'm going Tsonga, I think. I saw a bit of him on Grandstand against Anderson, and I was quite impressed. I know Sock beat Cilic, and maybe if I'd seen more of that match, I would be... I'm just biased because I've seen Tsonga, and he looked good.
OK, fine. We're going to have to pole vault all of this. Catherine's just beaming.
Not necessary.
You look so happy about that choice. Well, it's happening, so I've got the Twitter account. You can do...
This is the match of the day, right here, Grandstand, Monfils Bagdatis.
What are they doing putting that on at 11 in the morning? I mean, you know, this is Monfils. There'll be nobody there. You need to get that match underneath some... I mean, seriously, it's Monfils Bagdatis. What time is it right now? We're recording at. It is 20 past 10 at night. I want to see Monfils against Bagdatis in the pitch black with the floodlights on.
I completely agree. When I saw these top half matches, I thought, oh, my goodness, how are they going to make a decision about what to put on Ash and what to put on Armstrong? It didn't even occur to me that Monfils Bagdatis would be on Grandstand. As great as that court is, I have to say they've done a fantastic job. That should not be there, and it should not be at 11 o'clock.
I think it's time for us to go. Tennis podcast listeners, the bus is going. Catherine and I are going to run like the speed of light, trying to make it onto the bus in time. But we've been talking to you, so we're quite happy. Now, listen, follow us on Twitter at Tennis Podcast. Keep a lookout, because we might have a go at a periscope. That means Catherine and myself sitting in front of a phone and talking to you lot, hopefully on video. We'll see how that goes, whether I can make it work. But we are the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph. Thank you for listening, as always, and we'll speak to you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.